there's a resistor in there, and that got him angry. That may be overly severe. These are some of my first impressions on this one, Mel. Seems like we've run into this kind of a situation at least once before. K2KEY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yes, this is K2KEY. Yep, that one that's made in Germany. That's another one that's a vertical, that strange type of vertical, again, with small footprint, and again, kind of pricey. And the bottom line is, yes, you can guide a thing with non-metallic guides, no doubt, and wind survival will be extended completely. Again, the price is kind of high. If you're just getting 23 feet of pipe, you could go in a Radio Shack, you know, and buy television pipe for a few bucks, or even order a good aluminum tubing if you wanted to build your own beam. And, okay, how would you match it? Okay, let's say you want to homebrew something like this. You can't come up with this money. You go and you buy yourself about, of course, you may be in materials, maybe 25 bucks. You can buy all kinds of materials. You can buy copper, L-copper, or aluminum pipe, or TV mounting mat. 23.5 feet. How would you make this? What exactly would contain what you would believe for a matching system, Dick? Over.
Inside of that black item is more than just a resistor. There is a loading coil. There is some kind of an LCR network in there, in my opinion. I'm looking at the bumps and valleys of the return loss curve that they supply. S11 is what it really is. Yeah, they call it return loss in dB on the left side. They call it standing wave ratio on the right-hand side. And there's a conversion between the two. And I believe all that. And it's got a logarithmic scale of frequency across the top. The first notch looks like it's at approximately 4 megacycles. The next notch looks like it's at 7 megacycles. Then at 1 at 10. Yeah. 23 feet of pipe would not do that. There's a lot more going on there. Oh, by the way, it works up to 90 megacycles with a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. What does it say? Max power, so-and-so. TX 3.5 to so. Okay, it'll receive from 2 to 90. And that's because a receiver is so forgiving. A receiver will tolerate a 50-to-1 standing wave ratio on HF frequencies and give very good performance. So I believe those numbers. So there is a loading coil in there, Mel. Loading coil, tuning capacitor, maybe two of them. It would be interesting for somebody in a particular group of guys to get one and reverse engineer it. It may be a little bit difficult to get inside there. It may be held together with Loctite, if you know what I mean, some stuff that's very hard to take apart. But there's ways. My guess is you've got $100 worth of materials there, or a little bit less, if you really wanted to build every bit of that. So you could save yourself some money if you're willing to spend the time and take a little bit of risk with reference to wind survivability, weatherproofing, and so on.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
But I don't know of any expensive materials that would be required to fabricate this if you're homebrewing it. There's no platinum or gold in there, if you know what I mean. So with a bunch of elbow grease and $50 to $100 worth of raw materials, I think you and I could build a thing like this. Nowadays, aluminum is getting very expensive. The most expensive part is going to be that aluminum tubing. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Now, the bottom line is you can homebrew it and make it a lot stronger than this because, like I say, you get some good mesh material like TV mesh. That stuff is, you know, like you say, a little bit on the hefty side, but survivability will be a little bit, maybe, I don't think, what does this thing weigh? Seven pounds. See, it's awful light also. So, okay, how do you go about now making a network up? That's the whole secret. The rest of it doesn't look like it amounts to very much. So that's where I guess you're paying all the money for the secret in the little black box, Dick. Over.
I agree with you, Mel. And they may have made it extremely difficult to take apart that black box. But for a guy like you who's crafty, I think you could find a way. And now, it's a compromise again. You're saving money, but you're going to spend quite a number of man hours gathering the materials, reverse engineering it, and so on. But if you've got a particular group of guys that really were enthusiastic, and they all live in restricted apartments, where they can barely do this and nothing else, this is a possible approach. Some of you guys are pretty well healed, and they'll just write a check and the problem goes away. For the others that are a little shy on money, I think this can be homebrewed. Every antenna can be homebrewed. There's nothing magic about this particular one. But I'm not convinced it contains any exotic, expensive materials like platinum or gold or diamond. So you could save some money if you're willing to spend some time. It would be a lot of fun to also find out what's inside and plug that into the respected computer antenna modeling programs and experiment with length of the mounting mast. I'm a little bit afraid the manufacturer, let me drop this, had a little old antenna engineer 5 years ago who developed this product. He's no longer with the company. He had a lot of hidden information in his brain that he didn't know about that maybe didn't appear in the notebook. He was smart enough to mount it on a mast of a particular length, which made it work well. And those who wrote up the owner's manual don't know that. Therefore, the average customer is not being told a hidden piece of information that there are certain lengths of mast that you mount this on that'll work well and other lengths of mast that'll not work so well. So by way of computer modeling, you can find out the extra secret of what's the ideal mounting mast. Because I think there's a 50-50 chance the manufacturer doesn't tell you. For a zillion years, Chris-Craft manufactured the Ringo Ranger antenna, and I've never heard anybody read the owner's manual saying that it was recommended to be mounted on a 7.5-foot mast, if that was the number, if you know what I mean. Have you ever heard anybody know what was the magic number that you're supposed to mount a Ringo Ranger on in order to get the best omnidirectional performance on the horizon? K2KEY, K2RIW.
Yeah, Roger.
Quickie.
Somebody said quickie. Who is that?
WA2JNF. Uh-oh. I've got to get out of the car and park on Ocean Parkway, and believe it or not, an opossum is walking down the sidewalk past me. Just want to let you guys know, one of the reviewers said that changing the lane to the pipe definitely affected the performance. I got to run. WA2JNF.
Beautiful confirmation performance, Stu. And don't worry about the opossum. He won't eat much. He's not going to attack you. He's afraid of you as you are of him. Okay, so that's confirming information. If the person did find out, the length of the mast makes a difference. But I had turned it over to you, Mel, of your merry group of guys who have used a lot of VHF antennas and done a lot of shootout comparisons of antennas. I'll bet you none of you guys have ever read a owner's manual on a Ringo Ranger made by Chris-Craft where they told you what is the right length of pipe to mount it on so it works well. Is that true, Mel? K2KEY, K2RIW?
Well, the original, you want to read the original? No, they said a average 10-foot television mast would be ideal. A lot of people didn't read that, but that's what it was many times. It was printed towards the bottom. The funny thing is, that's what I'm saying. They'll keep a lot of these things sort of secret. And but it was on the page, an average 10-foot television mounting type of mast with bracket is ideal for that particular antenna. And if you did that, they work quite well. Now, wait a minute. Let me tell you a funny story about antennas before I forget this. I put up a wire vertical for 10 meters, made out of all wire in a tree in the front of the house. This was for our 10-meter little go-arounds here on Sunday morning. And I put that up, and I came out Monday, and I found it hanging loose in the tree. The upper support cord that pulls up the vertical quarter wave section was cut. So I said, gee, how did this happen? Well, anyhow, I spliced it together. I pulled it up come Tuesday morning, and it's cut again. Let me let it drop. Now, says, gee, I don't know what's going on here, but I'll surprise it again and push it up and see if I can spot what the heck is going on here. I don't think anyone climbs up the tree 35 feet to cut the cord. And I, as soon as I stop putting it up, there's a bird with a nest up there that I didn't see before. And she, the mother bird, starts screaming at me. She was chirping away at me. And she is the one that went ahead and cut the cord. Vic, she don't want an antenna in her tree. Over.
Quite possibly she was picking at the cord, getting fibers to be added to the nest. Is that possible, Mel?
Whatever. But that's it. I gave up. I saw the thing somewhere else. I'm going to move it over to another location. But I've never had an antenna cut down by a bird before, Dick. Over.
Mel, what kind of a bird was it? A crow is very smart and can do things like that. Go ahead.
Blackbird. Looked like one of those blackbirds with, Mike, and a sort of an orange beak. Over.
That's the one. That's a very rugged bird. You don't want to mess with that bird. If that one starts diving on you, you'll be unhappy. How recent was this incident where that bird was cutting your support cords?
Week. Started. She must have started putting the nest up. Because it's up, the antenna's been in a tree now for quite a while, all winter long. And it just happens to work better because, you know, I've got the beam. I got six elements beam up on the 85-foot tower for 10 meters. But, you know, it's not the ideal antenna for guys here. I spoke to Barry. Oh, yeah, Barry NB sends his regards to everybody. I caught him this morning. He was joining us on the net. And so Barry... And another guy here is Brighton Beach. Drops. And another guy, you know, and they're all scattered around, so I keep moving the beam this way, that way. Otherwise, you know, the beam is pretty sharp, you know, and off the back of the beam, you don't hear so well. So I put the vertical up for use on the 10-meter net. Been up there all winter, all of a sudden. It's hanging loose, and only the vertical quarter wave radiator. She didn't touch the radios at all, Vic. Over.
She knows which part of the antenna is RF hot. And the rest of it didn't affect her. It didn't cross her threshold for radio frequency biohazard potential danger. That's a smart black bird you got there on Dover Street. That sounds like a crow or a red-winged blackbird. A blackbird or a crow. Yeah, they're pretty stealthy animals and pretty smart. You could have also made the support structure out of some other material that's very difficult to peck at and cut through. Was it a polypropylene rope that she was cutting through with her beak? Go ahead.
It's that black stuff, you know, that Dacron, I think they call it. You know, that black stuff that they sell for, says... And the advertisement says, use this rope and avoid catastrophic failure. That's the advertisement. That's what's making me laugh. That's what says on the package, the rope package. Avoid catastrophic failures. That's how you avoid it, by using this rope. Over.
Yeah, I've often used black Dacron rope. It contains carbon granules. That's what makes it black. That makes it UV protected. The top 64th of an inch of the rope gets hit with ultraviolet rays, but they get absorbed by the black carbon granules, and the rest of the rope is protected. So that's ultraviolet protected rope, usually made out of Dacron. There is a nylon version of that, which is very rugged, five times as expensive. I've got a piece of it as a sample, and that bird would never go through that. So you can buy... braided nylon black rope, if you go to the right kind of a store, Mel, where the rope itself is 3/16 inch, maybe a quarter inch diameter, maybe even a little bit more. Maybe it's 5/16 diameter. And it's a braided black stuff. It would take her a month of Sundays to peck through it. Whereas Dacron rope is easy to peck through, nylon rope is very rugged. And this braided stuff, it's almost like what's called kermantle rope. That's the very rugged rope that's used by mountain climbers. which has both linear strands internally and braided strands on the outside as a sheath to hold it all together. So you use the right kind of rope there, and she will tolerate it, and she'll occasionally peck at it, but nothing bad will happen. That's my recommendation, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
I'll leave her alone for the summer, you know, until she gets I guess she's got eggs in that nest, maybe, a little one. So I'll just won't annoy her by, you know, launching up there. Because I could do a very nasty thing. I got some very thin steel cable rope, and it's very thin stuff that picks it up, basically, a funny way. They use it, actually, it's as you picture, the thin steel cable that they use for connecting the transmission indicator to your speedometer in the car. It's that type of material, Dick. I don't know, I just saw a roll of it, and I have no idea why it would have come in a roll, but that's the kind of material it is, Dick. And strong as all hell. If you use it as a fish cord or something, you know, it's really strong stuff. So, all right, I'll let it go. It's not that important, over.
Yeah, it's not quite appropriate for the TechNet, but someday I'll tell you what I ran into last week. I was getting my car inspected, and the car that came in just before mine was part of a sting operation where the Motor Vehicle Bureau had sent around a car with a bunch of intentional errors to find out whether or not they would get caught by this inspection station. And boy, did that hang me up, because they caught on to what's going on at the inspection station. Therefore, they had to spend a couple of extra hours finding every single error that had been intentionally put into that car. And some of them were extremely subtle, cutting wires and shoving them back into the bundle, and taking off one lug nut on each one of the wheels underneath the covers. And all of them had good brake pads, except one pad in one corner, hard to see, was worn down to the metal, and all the others were perfect. And one tiny little notch cut in the rubber of the windshield wiper, and an extra wire added to the computer plug-in module, which made it bypass certain functions so that you couldn't detect certain errors. And the emergency cable broke and cut on one side only, so one wheel didn't have an emergency brake. Very subtle things, a whole group of those. So it took them a month of Sundays to find everything on that car, and that was the one being inspected right in front of mine. Kept me an extra hour and a half for that procedure. K2KEY, K2RIW.
K2YO.
Go ahead, Bernie.
Yeah, Dick, if you could just put me in line for a question / comment when you're ready for the next subject, please.
You're online. Now, Mel, you don't have to go over the metal. There's nylon rope you can put in there. And since you've already got a piece of rope that you can tie to, you can string through. It'll be a little bit difficult to splice. It'll go through the pulley, but you could bring up the really good nylon rope there without climbing past the bird and disturbing her if you want. Over to you, Mel, for the next subject, and if not, we'll go over to Bernie. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I understand your experience. They've had a few sting operations here also in Brooklyn. Let's see. Yeah, no, there's no problem going through the pulley again. Splice, if I use shrink tubing, that's very easy. You know, if you want to go through a pulley, you got two pieces of cord and it's cut. You can't knot it and go back through the pulley. So what I do is I put a piece of the shrinkable tubing on, shrink it, and just gently pull it through the pulley, and be able to then, you know, do a regular splice. Yeah, I got another one here. Look at this. Oh boy, Comet is getting to work tonight. I got a question on the one next to it, Dick. The Comet H422. Would you like to hear this one? Over.
Yeah, I'm looking at that picture right now, so go right ahead.
Okay, and the question is, it's a rotatable dipole, and a couple of people inquired that if I put this thing up, do I have to rotate it? In other words, will I see a difference in a rotatable dipole? In other words, that's a good question. How much difference would you see if you rotate a single element antenna, Dick, over.
I say a lot, Mel. You don't have to rotate it. Just like as they say about the New York Times, you don't have to read it all, but it's nice to know it's all there. If you do take the time to install the rotator, you will get extra performance out of that V-shaped H422. So let me show you why. The way you're looking at that antenna right now, broadside, you stand off at a good distance and make polarimetry measurements. That antenna, as you're looking at it right now, broadside, is purely horizontally polarized. Rotate that antenna in azimuth 90 degrees so that you're looking at it in plane. What you see is purely vertically polarized. That antenna is an omnidirectional antenna. It radiates north, south, east, west, and all the compass points in between. That's the good news. But now if you did a careful plot, let me drop. If you did a careful plot of polarimetry, in other words, what is the instantaneous polarization? As you rotate that antenna into a fixed receiving site while you're transmitting, you will see it slowly slide from horizontal through some other polarization into vertical. That some other polarization, you're going to ask me, is it slant 45 or is it elliptical? And the answer is yes. Every antenna has a little bit of cross polarization. Technically speaking, every single antenna is slightly elliptical. Now, a pure horizontal dipole, the axial ratio, the ellipticity ratio, is probably 40 decibels. In other words, the cross polarization is probably 40 dB down. On this particular antenna, it may only be 10 dB down. So, depending on the state of the ionosphere, that guy you're listening to from London, for certain periods of time, the majority of the signal he's sending you is vertically polarized. At some other time of the day, in some other state of the ionosphere, the signal you get is horizontally polarized. With this thing, you're rotating it. You think you're changing the pattern when you rotate it because you watch your S-meter going up and down. The main thing you're doing is you're changing the polarimetry, horizontal versus vertical versus elliptical. And whether you tilt it to the left or tilt it to the right of broadside, it's going to give you the opposite sense of polarimetry, of elliptical polarization. In my opinion, that antenna is very subtle. It's got a lot of elegance of simplicity. If you put on the rotator, if you've got the resources to put on the rotator, I think you're going to get a lot of bang for the dollar. I like it. K2KEY, K2RIW.
WB2HWW with a question on that antenna, please.
How we recognize? Mel first. Go ahead, Mel.
Okay. So you feel that if it's like in a horizontal position, a rotator would also be beneficial, as well as if it's in the V shape. So we will recommend putting a rotator on it, that it will give us improvement in its performance. That's the bottom line, Dick. Over.
Not quite. In the case of the V-shaped one, the H22 Victor, which really is V-shaped, that one I have strong motivation for rotating it, because all those words I just said was directed toward that antenna. The picture below it, the H22 horizontal, yes, that antenna, you're purely changing the pattern when you rotate it. And when you rotate that antenna so that it's end fire toward London, London is not going to hear you. So that antenna really is a rotating pattern, which allows you to null out a signal in a particular direction if that's what you want to do. But that V-shaped antenna, which really is a 90-degree apex V, the left-hand wire, the left-hand pole is 45 degrees tilted up above the ground, the right-hand pole is tilted 45 degrees up above the ground. I'm describing this for Howie. And between the two is a 90-degree angle. And it's got a support structure that'll hold that all together. You put a azimuth rotator below that. That's going to give you a lot of bang for the dollar, because quite often the QSB fade you see, you think the signal is hopping over you. In many cases, that signal has been rotated in polarization by what's called the Faraday rotation effect. Let me drop. The ionosphere is a plasma. It's a conducting medium gas substance, something like 60 kilometers up or whatever. 80, depending on which one of the layers you're talking about, EF, F1, F2, and there's a simultaneous magnetic field in that plasma created by the Earth's magnetic field. As such, that signal on, let's say, 80 meters that propagates from London to you rotates some number of times in polarization. If you could see the whole path of that signal going through the ionosphere getting to your house, you would think that signal had gone down a helical antenna. It's rotating in polarization while it's in that ionosphere. That's what Faraday rotation is. And when it comes back out of that ionosphere, it arrives at your QTH on Long Island in some particular polarization, horizontal, vertical, slant 45, slant 45 to the right or the left, or elliptical polarization, maybe even circular polarization. So with that V-shaped antenna and a rotator, you're sort of changing the pattern, but the main thing you're doing is changing polarimetry effect. And there are a lot of times when you take that V-shaped antenna and rotate it, you're going to suck that guy out of the noise, where you take the horizontal antenna and rotate it, and he will not come out of the noise. That horizontal antenna has essentially no capability to listen to a vertically polarized signal, where the V-shaped guy does. Over to you, Howie, K2RIW in the deck there.
K2RIW, WB2HWW, Dick. This antenna, if you're planning, what is it? Is it an adjustable dipole? Because that's what I'm looking for now. Is this a inverted V, but actually a V? Now, if it's a V antenna, that means the apex is at the bottom, and the V is a regular V. Now, if you made that an inverted V, would you get a different performance if the ends went towards the Earth, Dick? Go ahead. Can you explain to me what kind of connector is on it? Just give me a brief description of this antenna, Dick.
Yeah, you're lucky you didn't time out because you picked up before the beep that time. You didn't time out, all's well. There is a triangular-shaped chunk of metal at the bottom of the antenna. The apex of the V is closest to the ground, and the two halves of the dipole, so to speak, are really pieces of tubing sticking up in the air at a 45-degree angle to the Earth. One to the left, one to the right, up at a 45-degree angle. So the apex is down at the bottom, and that's the way it is mounted. Those two halves are insulated from each other, some kind of a balloning structure, and you feed it in the center, and you rotate that mounting structure with a good azimuth rotator. I think you're going to get a lot more performance out of that V-shaped dipole than the straight-out dipole. There are certain people who just love straight-out dipoles, and that's the one they're going to buy. So they sell both. You can buy it either way. If I made the V as an inverted V, where the apex is the highest, and the two radials are sticking down, there's two disadvantages of doing that. It will work, but there's two disadvantages. One, the phase center of the antenna is now considerably lower, closer to the ground. That's a slight disadvantage. There may be a slight mechanical advantage, and that'll drive, have a little bit more wind survivability if you V it down instead of V it up. Or, in other words, the normal V is going to have a little more wind load on it than the inverted V. And a little bit of difference in wind survivability. Let me drop. But the two disadvantages of an inverted V of a rotatable antenna. Now, an inverted V built out of wire gives you a lot of performance for the money if you've got one central high support for the V, for the apex, and you slant the other two down to egg insulators and supports on trees and bushes and things on the ground. That's a good antenna. This thing has a rotatable structure. When you V it downward, as you have in an inverted V, your phase center is lower to the ground. You're going to have a little bit lower performance because altitude always helps, with rare exception. Second of all, those tips of the inverted V that are closest to the ground, as you rotate it, are going to come closer to something that's on your property, your tree, the gutter, whatever. And there's going to be a slight change in capacitance of end loading as you rotate it. That's a minor change in the visoir. Your antenna tuner will take care of it. But you're going to see a slight change in performance as you rotate it from that effect. So if you have the resources to V it in the normal way as opposed to an inverted V, I think you're ahead of the game and get the most bang for the dollar. Over to you, Howie. K2RIW, wait for the beep.
All right, what is the model number? Because I want to go look, I want to read about it. Does it have an SO239 on it? The next question is this. What about if you took two of those, frequency do you want to use? Let's say you want to use this on one frequency or one set of frequencies, and you ran two quarter wave pieces of cable to it. You made a phasing harness. Would you want to make it in phase or out of phase? If you took two of those antennas and you had one go north-south, one go east and west, you wouldn't need a rotator. You might lose 3 dBs, but you would have all angles, right, Dick?
Yes, you would. I didn't see it, but I think it's got an SO239 connector. This is the Comet N Maldol, is the brand name. C-O-M-E-T-N-M-A-L-D-O-L is the brand name. The one with the V, upward normal V, is model number Hotel 422 Victor. The exact name, it says, is Hotel-422 Victor Space Shape, S-H-A-P-E. Whereas the other one that's straight out is Hotel-422 Horizontal. So the V shape is the one I think you're interested in. If you bought a pair of those and mounted them at right angles to each other, I strongly recommend you feed them with two separate feed lines. You then come down into the shack into a switching network. Now you've got full adaptability. You can feed the one that's north-south, or you can feed the one that's east-west, or you can now feed them in various combinations with a 90-degree phasing line to make them go clockwise or counterclockwise, put the delay line after the power divider. The delay line at first goes to the north-south, or later on you put the delay line into the east-west with your switching network. Now you've got full electronic adaptability and no rotator is concerned, is required. Which is going to give you the best bang for the dollar is going to be your next question. Let me drop.
Dick, can I make another comment here, please?
K2YO.
Dick, the question is this. If it's going up at a place where you cannot, where it's going at a remote site, you're not going to want to be able to remotely switch this thing. So, and if you put them two together, would they have to be at the same location, or could you separate them by 10 or 15 feet? Or would they have to be at the, both antennas would have to be at the same origin? And if you could tell me what price range this is, I'm going to go look this up. I've been looking for something like this. Go ahead, Dick.
Yeah, Bernie recognized, we're going to go over to him in a second. If you're feeding one at a time, you do not have to co-locate them. You can make one north-south on the north end of the building and make one east-west on the east side of the building if you want to. And to flip from one to the other, depending on which works better, by on a remote building to have a way for sending a command that flips that relay, I know you can handle that if you want to. That's your choice. If you're going to use the circular polarization thing that I just described to you, I strongly recommend you co-locate them. Otherwise, it gets kind of sloppy as to what you're really doing. If you're going to feed them both simultaneously with a 90-degree delay line or without the delay line, feed the two of them simultaneously from a power divider, put the delay line in one or the other. That's three different combinations depending on what are the band conditions and what azimuth the guy is from you. One of those is going to work better today than all the other combinations. To have that electronic switching capability would be kind of fun. I don't know the price of this. The manual, of course, doesn't tell you. The advertisement, page number 3 of the latest issue of QST Magazine is where this ad is. And by way of the website, I'm sure you...
K2YO.
By way of the website, I'm sure you can pretty easily find out the price. Maybe Bernie's going to tell us all that. Bernie, K2YO, go right ahead.
Yes, affirmative, Dick. Now he's going into details. It's fed with an SO239, and Universal Radio is showing a price of $389.95. K2YO.
That is a lot of money. Is it adjustable? Okay, sorry, I didn't wait for it to be. Hold on. Is that an adjustable frequency? Is it adjustable to the frequency? Is it using coils? Because I'm not looking for traps. Does this antenna, you just adjust it to whatever frequency you want? Go ahead, YO.
I'm not really sure. I was looking at details on the Internet. I don't believe it is adjustable. I think it has coils in it. Dick, you can probably answer that a lot better than I.
In the photograph, Howie, I see no obvious coils, although there could be very easily one at the bottom of the V that's hidden by some words in the picture. It claims it operates on 40, 20, 15, and 10, compact broadband rotatable dipole. The thing you'll like to hear about this one, it says max power 1,000 watts sideband, 500 watts FM. That implies if there's a dummy load in there, it's very little of dummy load, so to speak. Standing wave ratio less than 1.5 to 1 at center frequency. Rotation radius of the V, 12 feet 6 inches. Length of the V, 24 and a half feet. Length of the V, 11 pounds, 14 ounces, let's call it 12 pounds. Wind load, 3 square feet. Maximum wind speed, 67 miles an hour. A little bit pricey, but for certain guys in certain locations, that may solve certain problems. Over to you, Howie. Wait for the beep.
Yeah, that's not what I want. See, Dick, I'm actually working on it. I am looking to make an antenna that has no coils, that would just be cut for a certain frequency. That's too broadband of an antenna. This is just going to be used for receiving on 10 meters, 29, 520, no, 560. So basically, something like that would be great if it was adjustable, like the old ham stick or the trick stick, where you can adjust it to the exact length if you wanted to, using an SWR meter or a return bridge, and that would be the bottom end. But this looks like this is a multi-band antenna, and I don't want a dummy load. I have nothing against resistors if you want to do broadband, but I need a maximum amount of performance. Too bad that no one makes something like that without any coils, and it, you know, makes the amount. Other than that, you would have to fabricate something. K2RIW, WD2HWW. Well, my hopes would just dash. I thought this was a simple D antenna that you can adjust it to whatever frequency or the dipole, but I guess they got coils or some electronics in it, Dick.
Okay, you said some magic words, Howie. I only need it for a receiving antenna. If that's true, let me hit you with a puzzle. Let's assume I've got a full 132-foot long half-wave dipole on 80 meters, and just to pick a number, it's mounted 66 feet in the air. So it's mounted a quarter wave in the air. It's a full half-wave length long, and I connect that antenna directly to my receiver, and I get an S9 signal from my buddy who's talking to me right now from London. I then plug in a 6-decibel pad between that ideal antenna and my receiver. And I used to have S9 signal strength. I now have S8 signal strength because I've added a 6 dB attenuator, a 4-to-1 power attenuator. Half voltage comes out of that attenuator. What do you believe is the change in signal to noise ratio that I hear coming out of the loudspeaker of that receiver in that environment when I add that attenuator? Over to you, Howie, K2RIW.
Well, your noise is going to... If the antenna is too long, you're going to get all kinds of loads. Okay? Going from S9 to S8, you're also reducing the background noise. So you might have an advantage there on an S9 signal, but if it was S1 or S2, that's not going to be helpful, Dick. Go ahead.
You're a little bit noisy that time, but I heard everything you said. When I go from S9 to S8, the antenna with 6 dB of attenuation attenuated the signal by 6 dB, attenuated the noise by 6 dB, absolutely no change in signal-to-noise ratio, and if I sweep across the band, that antenna now, because of the 6 dB pad, has a much lower standing wave ratio. Under certain circumstances, that's an advantage. You're absolutely right. If the signal coming out of the receiver was really an S1, and the receiver was state-of-the-art, not a dead receiver, then you're absolutely right. Putting in the pad is going to hurt signal-to-noise ratio, because now the signal is slowly digging into the noise. But on the 80-meter band, most days of the week, I am guessing the noise of the background is S6 or greater, some number like that. The amount of noise on 80 meters on the average day is probably equal to a 30 decibel noise figure. Until I add more than 20 decibels of attenuation, the signal-to-noise ratio will not change. So, in many cases on HF frequencies, on an open band, you can get away with terrible amounts of attenuation and nothing bad happens. Signal-to-noise ratio stays the same. And by the way, your ability with that attenuator, let me drop. If you're doing a contest operation and 20 feet away in the next tent is the guys on some other band blasting away with a kilowatt and it's bombing you, with that attenuator you're going to have a lot more survivability. So on a noisy band like many of the HF bands, when the band is open, the attenuator hurts you not one bit in what you hear coming out of the loudspeaker. The one thing I don't know and I should know, let me turn it over to Mel for this one. If I get on the 80 meter band at high noon when the D layer absorption is huge, I think I still see a pretty significant amount of S meter noise coming out of my receiver. Is that true, ML? K2KEY? K2RIW?
Let's put it this way. This time of the year, it's noise. You've got the, lightning capital of the world to the south of us down in Florida. And you hear, I look at the spectrum display, and it's just a mess. And if that's, when I talk to my friends, like my friend George, Pennsylvania, near Pittsburgh, a few nights a week, he's running a kilowatt with full-size antenna, 80-meter antenna, all the way up also, as I am, both kilowatts going both ways. And it takes that much to make a decent communication because, give you for instance, you said a noise level of F6, that is mostly in the quiet of the winter time at around midnight. The noise level right now on 75, 80 meters is quite high. In fact, the 160 during the contest that they had in January, the 1CW contest that I joined in for briefly, the noise level never went below 10 over 9, Dick, over.
Comment again, HWW, you want to comment on this subject?
Yeah, I'm going to go over to you in a minute, Harry. Let me find out from Mel one more thing here. Without a doubt, at nighttime on 80 meters, I'm going to hear tremendous amounts of static crashes from lightning. At high noon on 80 meters, when I'm getting a huge amount of D-layer absorption, unless the guy is running a whole lot of power, 30 miles away, he's going to be very difficult to hear. At high noon, with that tremendous amount of D-layer absorption, do I still hear static crashes, Mel? K2KEY, K2RIW?
It depends where the, the noise is being, originated from. If it's coming in here over the ocean, some stormy weather locally, no, I don't think you're going to pick up. I don't think you're going to pick up the lightning noises that occur, maybe occurring 1,500 miles south of us. But it seems like it's all around. In fact, I understand, if I'm not wrong, there's at least 1,000 lightning strikes every minute somewhere in the world. Is that correct?
It could very well be every second. Could very well be every second, but it's a huge number. And so, with that D-layer absorption, unless that lightning is within, let me pick a number, 30 miles of you, I think that lightning signal trying to propagate through the ionosphere is going to be so heavily absorbed by the D-layer absorption, you're still going to see a lot of noise out of your receiver, but it's broadband D-layer absorption noise, so-called black body noise, as opposed to lightning crashes. That's what I remember hearing. Go ahead, Howie. KQRIW, wait for the beep.
Dick, in the application talking about 80 meters, yes, you would be right. One S in order to make a difference. But when you're trying to listen to an FM signal that could be having a lot of QSB and your noise floor is S1 or S2, putting a 6 dB pad is going to hurt you. I'm running a 3 dB. I'm moving 3 dB to a filter. That's okay, but when you start adding 6 dBs, it's going to hurt you as far as receiving. Yeah, if you're on 20 or 40 or 80, That's not going to make the difference. But if you're listening to a 10-meter narrowband FM signal, which can go anywhere from 10 over 9 down to S1 or S2, you really don't want to handicap yourself. Go ahead, Dick.
On VHF, what I said goes down the tubes and doesn't work. Rough rule of thumb on 80 meters, the noise on the horizon is something like a 30 or 40 decibel noise figure. You could, at the time that the signal on the horizon is a 30 decibel noise figure, you could run a 25 decibel noise figure receiver, and you'd get beautiful reception, and flip over to a perfect receiver, and you'd have almost no improvement. But since that noise on the horizon, from D-layer absorption and ionosphere and static crashes and thunderstorms and everything else, falls off something like 6 decibels per octave as you go up in frequency. By the time you get to 2 meters, you want that receiver to have as low a noise figure as you can get, because the noise on the horizon is starting to get very quiet. Now you better have a good impedance matched antenna, low loss feed line, a good noise figure, low noise preamp front end, a sensitive receiver with high dynamic range if you want to really survive that environment. By the time you get to 2 meters and above, VHF and UHF, all of this jazz of noise on the horizon and tolerance of high insertion loss cables and attenuators and a resistor built into the antenna, a lot of that tolerance goes away. Back to you, Howie, K2RIW.
What would you say the noise floor is at 10 meters, down around maybe 10 dB over, 5 to 10 dB? What would you say it would be between 28 and 30? That would be about 4 or 5 octaves probably. No, 3, 6, 12, 24, I would say 4 times. Right, Dick?
The exact way you do it is you take the ratio of the frequencies, divide one into the other, take the log. Then take the log of 2, divide that second answer into the first answer, and you know the exact number of octaves. There's 3.1 octaves between 3.5 megacycles and 30 megacycles. If I did it right, I did it very fast. So with that formula, you're really changing the... what you're doing is you're converting to base 2. You take your frequency ratio, take the log of it to base 10, take the number 2, take the log of it to base 10, divide that second log into the first log, and you know the exact number of octaves. So, 6 dB per octave, 3 octaves, 18 dB, almost 19 dB of fall off. There's still a fair amount of noise on 30 megacycles on an average day. If the noise figure was 30 dB on 80 meters, and I do that subtraction, it's still going to be 11 dB of noise figure on 30 megacycles. The noise on the horizon on 80 meters being 30 decibels, I think is conservative. I think it's usually more than that. So that's how you can do the formula. And by the way, does it always fall off exactly 6 dB per octave? Of course, there's some bumps and grinds and other things going on. Very rough rule of thumb. We can use that mathematics. Over to you, Howie.
I understand that, so that's why you don't want to use it. You want a real antenna. You want an antenna that's going to not be a resistor on 10 meters. All right, Dick. So the only thing is this. That would be a perfect antenna if it was adjustable, if somebody would make an adjustable antenna or single band, but obviously that is meant for, you know, multi-band operations. Well, that's what I've been looking around for. All right, Dick. I just came in because I heard somebody mention rotatable dipole and a vid, and it perked my interest. K2RIWWD2HWW. If it's not adjustable physical length, then it's either got traps. And Comet is known for making these broadband antennas. Also, they let me tell you one thing about their vertical antennas. A lot of their antennas have some kind of wire inside or a linear tuning. I don't know exactly how they do it, but the wire itself has some resistance in it. Some of their dual-band antennas are not what they say they really are. Go ahead, Tim.
As I look at the picture of each of these antennas that we've talked about tonight, it is a telescoped piece of tubing with what looks like a hose clamp at each junction. So that's true for that V antenna. It's true for the Comet THA-250B. So if you wanted to mechanically, I think you could adjust their length if you wanted to favor a particular frequency. Okay. This was TechNet number 1000.
K-E-I-O.
This is TechNet number 1299. Coming up to 1300 of the series that began in September of 1982. I'm going to be saying 73. I'm going to turn it over to Bernie, who wants to say a couple of words, and then we're going to turn it over to Mel. K2YO, go ahead, Bernie.
Dick, I just wanted to give you the recap for the night. Our international friends in following countries have been on Taiwan, England, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Ukraine. Domestically, we've had folks in Kentucky, Las Vegas, Virginia, and California. So, as you now have realized, this is really in that 2YO.
Very interesting, Bernie. Let's see, the other guy who was coming through by way of IRLP, I forget who it was, his audio was quite a bit louder than yours. Your audio was a little bit low, and maybe there's a way of adjusting that. Sounds like we got some pretty wide coverage. Thank you for the information. 73, you all. K2RIW clear, and turn it over to our other net control station, Mel, K2KEY. You've got it, Mel.
Yeah, this is K2KEY. Yeah, I get inundated here with questions. It seems like they all, a lot of the questions are, you know, approximately what can I use in a location where we do have antenna restrictions, or it's got to be, because aesthetically it'll have to look right. So, there's quite a number of other, situations like this. And, it's hard to discuss. It's hard to recommend. So, okay, let's see. We'll try to take every week. We'll see if we can't debug some of these antenna systems and make your own judgment. 73's all. Have a great day tomorrow. Don't forget what Memorial Day is all about. As a former veteran, We do look to celebrate Memorial Day the correct way and give our thanks to many of those that didn't come back from protecting our freedom. So 73's all, and we'll pick it up with you all next week. This is K2KEY saying goodnight.
Bye-bye, you all. Try to be kind to each other.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
K2KEY, WD2HWW, copy me out.
Yeah, Howie, how are you? I particularly brought up some antennas that I thought you would be interested in tonight, Howie, over.
Yeah, I don't know if I want, I'll give you a call this week. See, that could be fabricated. I don't know if that could be fabricated. I just don't know what's going on. I'll have to read up on it without being able to see I would have to go actually see it, touch it. Dick says there's some hose clamps on it, so I don't know if that's adjustable. I don't want anything inside that box. I don't know. Maybe it has a network. Who knows what they're doing? But for $389, it seems like a lot of money. But if it's I guess he's spending a couple of $100s. But I don't know if you can fabricate. That's what I would like to fabricate. Fabricate a mount that I could, you could use that with an SO239 and two whips or two adjustable whips that could hold up. But it says it's only good for 67 miles. That's not a lot of windage.
Well, what you have to do is, 67 miles an hour. You can use non-metallic guides like we were discussing, and of course it will extend that range way up, way over 100 miles an hour easily, because it isn't that big, so you don't have to, in these cases, like the vertical one that we originally were discussing, adding the non-metallic guide, say, halfway up would no doubt make this antenna impervious to any wind that we would experience in this area. As far as the other one, these are multi-band antennas. I don't think you need something multiband. Am I correct? You're just particularly going to look for a 10-meter situation with this antenna, over?
Absolutely. I would apply that to both.
Well, okay, you have to fade it out there. Howie, I don't know if you turned it, I think you turned it back to me. No, so you wouldn't really need anything like this. You could fabricate a inverted V from just really not much in the course of material, because basically you're going to look for, what, two pieces of pipe 8 foot approximately long, joined in the middle if you're going to use, you know, pipe. If you're going to want to make it out of wire, well, of course, you just need a support in the center and make an inverted V type of conversion. I assume that's what you're looking for, over.
Absolutely, but I'm not looking to use it. Two, possibly 8.5 feet poles, if you want to call it, something in the middle that has a connector on it, or screw terminals, however, you know, terminated into feed lines, and a place to put a U-bolt or to go on to a mast.
Okay, so ideally what you're looking to is apply the material. Radio Works, I guess you've heard of them, had those kind of material. They got centerpieces for dipoles, inverted Vs, or whatever you want to put together that contains the connector. It contains the support, the strain relief for wires such as for an inverted V or dipole configuration, with the connector already molded into the setup. So all you have to do is either, you can go with either wire, or you can go with the pipe, or, you know, depends on how you want to, you know, mechanically lay it out. And in the case of you would need just a center support like a piece of TV mask, Howie, over.
That is correct. These center insulators with the connect, I guess you're on.
Howie, I don't know where you moved to, but you're dropping out.
I only need to go to wire. Look at the Bluetooth kind of a something. I might collect more.
I missed all that, Howie, because you just got into, just became almost all noise. You're most likely, I don't know, you're moving around in so whatever location. We just do not get any copy on you anymore, over.
Okay, is this any better now?
Now it's a great copy. Yeah, so as I said, Radio Works does have that type of, you know, pieces, parts, to put together ideally homebrew antennas in different configurations, over.
Okay, the question is this. A lot of those are meant for wire antennas that you have a centerpiece with a connector molded into it, looks like a ballon type thing with two loops on it that you tie a wire to. What I'm looking for is a centerpiece that would allow me to have a connector and then go directly to a pole, like two whip antennas or something, either with a lug or something, or a screw where I could screw in a, or thread in a whip. I don't want to go to wire. It's a thing I want it to be rigid. Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, so what you're looking for is a type of mount that will secure to the pipe to a center support, and then the two elements coming off of that, you want to put it into an inverted V position. You know, I don't know. There may be someone that is making those types of sensor supports. The ones that they're, you know, mostly providing for, yes, it is a multiple sensor support to a pipe, but if the loops, like, as you say, are made for adding wire on each side, Howie, over.
Yeah, it's about, I don't say, you know, valve or whatever, put it to the loop, that's alright, that piques my interest, but then I don't want to multi-band, I don't want to use a multi-band.
multi-band antenna. All right, now, I'm going to get out of here. Maybe you can be a cold blow in the wind. Yeah, we kind of fabricate a lot of work.